Fellas, Web Comics Weekly, starting it off. We're counting down to San Diego. What are we on, week three now? Week two?
Gosh, it's happening again. It's happening again.
How far out are we?
I think we're about 3 weeks out.
Let me open up iCal because my computer needs one more thing running. But
guys,
because
it's
important.
It's tomorrow.
It is.
Get on the plane. I'm supposed to be on the plane now.
So technically it's the 7th. It's Monday the 7th, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So a week from today is the 14th. All right? So that's one full week. And a week after that's the 21st.
Right.
I fly out the 22nd. And Wednesday, the 23rd, is when it starts. So we have only 1 week. Well, we have all of this week, all of next week, and then 2 days.
We literally have 7 hours. When you break down what I need to get done.
God, even with a calendar in front of me, I can't wrap my brain around what each box represents. We have 2 full weeks starting now, literally.
No.
Yes, 2 full weeks starting in it's midnight, so we have 2 full weeks starting right now, plus 2 days.
No, I believe that. Yeah. 14 plus 7.
Oh, my God. Panic on the Western Front. All right, so anyway, 2.5
Dave,
two weeks,
you've got an extra
2 hours
on us, so you're going to be fine.
I've got an hour and a half of driving time, right?
Yeah, Dave, yeah. Do you really ship anything?
No. What I do is I throw everything in the back of my truck Wednesday morning, and then I race drop down from Los Angeles to San Diego.
See, yeah, that is.
I will see you there.
That is the biggest problem for me. That's the biggest stress, is worrying about stuff getting there. So, I know that tomorrow I have T-shirts coming in that are being delivered, and then the very next day I've got to shove all those T-shirts into my booth container. Because Roadway is coming to pick up the booth on Wednesday, so it can be there by the 14th.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I haven't seen anything about my shirts yet.
I have similar concerns just in the day. Literally, if and when my books get delivered, they will get delivered, 2 days before I drive down to San Diego. So it's kind of so close that I'm my thought process now is that I'm not going to have my next book by San Diego. And I'm just trying to come to peace with that.
You don't think you will?
No, because I want to be pleasantly surprised, because I will be so bummed if it doesn't make it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. God, Dave, you won't have it. I agree.
You've got me nervous now, because you're doing it through where I'm doing it through, right? My books?
Yeah, but I I've literally done 7 books now, and whatever happened, my whole process fell apart this time. And we talked about this in an earlier podcast. And there's always a learning moment to make a positive out of it.
Chris, your book won't be there either.
All right, well. Gonna be rough.
Nobody's books are getting.
Nobody
there.
Will enjoy anything. You're not even going.
No, nobody should come. That's for sure. No one should show up at our booth.
Stay home. It's overpriced. San Diego's boring.
I would not do it. I wouldn't. Send bad weather. Ugly people.
That's what I always think when I step off the plane. Exactly.
There is a good chance you will be trampled by a mass of humans.
That's not
looking at the weather, I've already have San Diego programmed in my iPhone. Mm-hmm. I guess I don't. I have Seattle programmed in. Wishful thinking.
You know what? Without even consulting your iPhone, I can tell you what both are. Seattle, rain. San Diego, sun.
Exactly.
Not hard to figure out that one.
Don't be hating on.
I ain't hating on Seattle.
Okay. Because we're all moving there to start Half Pixel West.
Half Pixel Studios,
Half Pixel Limited.
Half Pixel Limited, nice. The Half Pixel Group. Then we sound like an international consulting firm.
People will be showing up on our door.
No, we don't see people. We only communicate through email.
Tiny slits in the door.
Exactly. What are we doing again right now? Oh, right, the podcast.
Let's warm this up. I have a very simple and fun question we can do real quick.
I'm ready.
Get me back into it, Dave. I've been absent for 3 weeks.
Oh
yeah,
you know
hey,
we should welcome back, by the way, Christopher M. Straub of latterly of Los Angeles, now of Dallas, Texas, USA.
By the way, guys, I wanted to say, notice that Brad is missing. I am taking his place as podcast souse.
Oh, are you drinking?
Oh yeah, I got a beer in front of me right now. We'll see. We'll see how far it takes me.
And I haven't learned my lesson from last week, have a latte in front of me at 10 o'clock at night, so this is good.
And an ice pack.
I'm finishing a lemonade because I'm in Texas. Hey, so I have a funny thing before you get to your question, Dave. Last week, we debuted a new method of recording our show to improve the audio quality. And as a joke, we said that we were all in the same room, that we had gotten a sponsorship from Southwest Airlines, and that everyone was flying down every week. I got an email from someone asking me what our contact was at Southwest Airlines because they wanted to set up a similar sponsorship for the Stumptown convention. And I just had to relay that to you, Dave, because I thought that was so funny.
That's almost too rich.
Southwest is going to be under investigation shortly, and they just had to use up all their fuel. That's why they have this.
Scott, can I tell you where I thought that joke was going to go? I thought you were going to be like, and I got an email asking who our contact was, and that email, bgeiger@yahoo.com.
No.
Brad emails us later, hey, seriously, what is our contact at Southwest? Because I got a couple cons I got to go to.
No, I just thought that was so funny that what we thought was a completely ridiculous joke turned out to be...
You know what, though? And you know what? This actually will turn into a question, and I'll throw it at both of you guys. Haven't you guys learned, because I learned this lesson in public life, if you say something ridiculous in your blog, there will be one person out there that will be like, what? Really? You don't say.
Yes.
Well, what do you know?
Dave, that was that whole thing where I swore I wouldn't shake hands anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when I did that?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I remember that.
And then I did a joke, because Chris helped me construct it, where I said that, I think it was like a day later, I said that from now on there was going to be a yellow line outside of my booth that people had to stand behind to address me. And I took a picture of my booth from San Diego, and I photoshopped in this yellow line. And people were furious. They were furious with me that I was suggesting that. You know,
at least make it white.
People still come up and say, well, I'm not going to shake your hand because I know you don't shake hands.
And did they come up saying that as if they were the only one who said that day?
Yeah, they do.
By the way, don't know if you remember this.
But how does that inform your writing? It's not so much in the strip, but how does that inform your writing for the blog? Because every once in a while, I will go to write something and I think there will be some moron somewhere that will take this seriously. Do you just consider that to be the lowest common denominator and sort of ignore it? And write what you were going
to
write anyway? Or how
no,
do you
I tend to worry about it.
I tend to ignore it, and then I can just correct and or admonish whoever writes me. It hasn't been that big of a deal.
If the thing is, it's like, it used to be that anything, like there was no sacred cows. Like, make the joke. It's okay. You're clearly a satirist, and you're doing it in the proper context, so go for it. And I did a joke years ago, where Francis thought he had transported himself to the future and he was going to return to his time, so nothing he did in the future counted because he was going to return to his present time in the past and he could relive it and nothing he did in the future would happen. So he squeezed Jade's boob. And it was very innocent, very funny, very, oh God, aren't teenage boys led by their hormones? And when it came time to collect that in the book, I asked a friend to do a cover, and it was Mike Ringo, and he did this cover in the old EC horror vein.
Yeah, I remember that.
So it's Jade up against the wall, and there's this horrific male, like EC-looking gnarly hand coming at her, and it said, you know, tales to chill, and then it said, I was a teenage hormone, or something like that. And I got an email from another cartoonist who will go unnamed. But, Dave, I'll tell you later, you'll be shocked. And he was like, hey,
it's like dave@davekellett.com.
No, but Dave. I only say this because I think Chris already knows. But you will be shocked at the cartoonist.
I don't think I know that one.
You don't know? Oh.
Scott, I was a teenage hormone.
No, how but he was you? Like, hey, sexual assaults on women are not funny. You've never lived through it. You've never been with anyone that's lived through it. Obviously, you should not. That is just not funny to glorify or encourage sexual assaults on women. And so you got to be. It's
well. Now
awful.
I gotta go look at the cover. Now was it really bad?
No, it was
or?
Really.
Oh
like
no!
One
go
of
to
the
PvP.
Covers.
Go to PvP and then go to the comic book. and it's issue 7. If you did not know that that was about a boob squeeze, you would never know from the cover that guy was reaching for
anything. It could have been it looked like a murder.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look at it. There's nothing
about
it.
Did you write him back? You don't know what it's like to be attacked by a zombie. It's not funny.
I think I wrote him back and said, you're and stop emailing me.
You wrote him back and said, and I love High and Lois, by the way. So thank you very much.
Whatever. I did. I said.
You said, Garfield is one of my favorites.
Yeah. I said, hey, you know what sucks more than sexual assault on women? Mondays. Hey.
All right, so I'm at the PvP site and I'm looking at it, and I want to ask you, what is this feature where is this sort of Flash where the image pops up in a sub box?
So glad you asked that. That is a Java based, or is it Flash? Anyway, it's called Lightbox, and it's
you should make use of it.
Will you email me the details on that? There's a couple spots on my website where I could make good use of that.
Yeah, you can. It's JavaScript. You can put it anywhere on your site, David, when you display an image. And you can even use it to display galleries. And it's very lightweight. It doesn't put a strain on your...
Not a big server load.
Yeah, I don't think that it is.
Yeah, in fact, there's a... Well, I was going to say there was a plugin for WordPress that implements it on all images, but you don't run WordPress, Dave.
Yeah, no. there's a couple versions of it, Dave. One is called Lightbox, and one is there's another one called Slimbox.
Ayo.
And there's Lightbox 2, so if you Google it.
Much the same.
Yeah, they are. Here, Dave, I will copy
There's another one called
link.
Thickbox, which I used to use.
All right, here is our first question of the week. This is from the best name we've ever received, from Cyrus Mortazavi. That is a great last name. Mortazavi. Is that what do you think?
Gosh, what is it with everybody with the cool last names?
I don't know.
That is a great last name. That anyway,
it's Latvian.
Is it? You think it's Eastern European? I'm guessing, Cyrus.
It's Latvian for "Doom does not suffer fools."
Question.
Well, Cyril is the Russian name, which is the Russian alphabet, right? Listen to me. Never mind. All right, so offcampuscomic.com is his website. Here's the question. It says, gentlemen, this year I've begun promoting my webcomic smaller regional cons, and it has become abundantly clear to me that a cartoonist needs a business card. However, outside of a brief sidebar in the book, I haven't found a whole lot of info as to what the card should look like. In your guys' estimation, what should a web cartoonist business card look like? What info must it contain? Anything to avoid? And finally, what occupational title should one give oneself? For example, does Scott's card read Scott Kurtz, president of Toonhound Studios, or Scott Kurtz, artist, writer, cartoonist of PvP? All my best, Cyrus Mortazavi. I love that name.
How about he just put his own name on the card, and that's it? And that's already awesome.
I'm so glad that he asked that question, man. That is such a great question for tonight. Because I am in the process of making a business card for myself right now, and I have no idea what to put on it.
Ah, well, let me pull out my business card, and Chris can pull out his. Let's
see here. If I have
what
one.
What do I have? I think mine just says Dave Kellett, friend of Chris Straub.
And mine says friend of Dave Kellett.
We're friends, Chris Rob. We're friends.
Always
I asked
bragging
Chris
about
what
it.
To put on mine, and I think I believe he had a smart aleck remark for me.
How typical is that?
I think you said, just put your name on it and say cartoonist. It's easy. And then I was like, oh, just that? And you said, put something iconic, have skull sucking on an Eisner.
I think it would be funny.
Really?
That wasn't entirely smart ass.
Do you think my card should just have skull sucking on an Eisner?
Yeah. My suggestion to our awesome named friend is put on the card something that you want people to perceive you as. For example, Scott, I think you should put on your card cartoonist. Even if you are, I mean, I know you're not the president of Toonhound because you have no structure like that for it, but if you put that on the card, then everybody's going to go, president of what? Who's it? And it sounds like you're faking it. So
I never do.
Don't put that.
I think I would back out even further, Chris, and say, like, before you even make your card, you have to think to yourself, who am I giving this to at conventions?
Yeah.
If you're giving a card out to readers, which, by the way, I wouldn't recommend at all, But if you're giving a card out to readers, you want the least amount of information possible on there. So, you know, Chris Straub, cartoonist, and then chris@starslip.com, and then maybe your website.
Right.
But if you're giving this out to serious business contacts, which might bring in substantial income or be advertisers or something like that, you do want to give them your phone number, your email, possibly your mailing address, although that's used less and less in the world going forward. But I would think you would want, you know what I mean? You sort of have to figure out who you want to give it to before you put the information on there.
Right. I made a card a couple of years ago that was pretty much the same as my current business card, except it had my phone number on it. And not only has that phone number lapsed, but there were very few people I actually wanted to give that card to.
Yeah.
So I kind of shot myself in the foot.
And don't think I don't remember that you wouldn't give me the card, by the way.
Yes.
Still,
well,
still,
you know, I
things.
Had run out and there was all kinds of, you know how it is.
Camera pans over to a full box of cards right on the table.
So anyway.
Don't feel bad, Dave. I got one of those cards and the number was fake.
At Domino's.
I.
Chris, can I talk to Chris, please?
I think if it's a business card that you're not sure who you're going to give it to, the best and safest thing to do is just have, Chris Straub, cartoonist, email address, URL. That's all you need, really.
Yeah, your email and your URL.
Any other information, and, you know, worst case scenario, like I only give my business card out to, I don't know how you would say it, substantial business contacts. So I don't mind having my phone number on there, but there is no information that you can't then transfer by email and say, hey, you know, email me your phone number. I'd like to talk about what we discussed at the convention, that sort of thing, you know.
Although
well,
you can't...
and also, what I was going to say is that the thing that strikes me about these cons, especially San Diego, is they're awful places to do business. And business cards end up becoming these placeholders. Like, look, when we get back and the con's over and things get less crazy, we should talk. And so that's when I always find myself looking for a card. And, yeah, never put your phone number or your address or anything on a business card, you know. It's just a bad idea. But if you do meet someone and you're like, oh, yeah, this is awesome, we definitely should talk after the con, flip it over. Write your phone number on the back of it so he's got it, you know.
Right. You can always do that.
Yeah, you can always add information, but you never want to be like – as your heart sinking as you're handing someone your card, you know, like, oh, God, don't call me, don't call me, oh, God.
Or better yet, you're like, oh, yeah, definitely, I got a card for you. Hold on a second, let me just scratch out phone number. All right. And cross out my last name. Okay, there you go.
There you go. Don't use my original pre-married spelling. All right, that's great. Fantastic. You know, I think Brad, I kind of wish he was here on this question, because I think Brad actually has three or two, maybe I'm misremembering this. I think he has two or three different business cards. One that he gives out when he runs out of flyers that's just sort of, it's almost a promotional card. You know, it has like a tiny comic strip on the back, and then it has a URL on the front with his name. And
right.
And then he has another one that just sort of has an email address with his name. And then for business contacts that are either, you know, a newspaper editor or a reporter or an advertiser for his site or something like that, he has more information. I think that was Brad. Maybe it was somebody else. But I thought that was clever, you know, because if you're going to spend the money on business cards and to the point where it's worth it to you, two steps is not going to break the bank when you go to Vistaprint or when you go to overnightprints.com or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, and also the simpler the card, I feel, the more reusability. I mean, you know, it seems like every year in the past, I would put something on my business card that the following year it didn't apply any longer, so I had to toss them all out. So
right.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, Scott, I'm looking at my business card now. I have my email address. I have my cell phone, which I'm comfortable giving out to business contacts. I don't give my home phone out. And then I have my P.O. box, which is a business thingamajiggy. I have my website, and then that's
– Yeah, a P.O. box is safe. My question is, though, do you have, like, a picture on it? Like, do you have a picture of your cartoon character on it?
No, and I think I showed you guys my card at Emerald City, and you guys liked it. It's just it's really classy. It's a light blue on brown.
Yeah.
And it's a voice bubble. Like it intimates a cartoonist without saying cartoonist, which is I think is kind of subtle in a way. Like I'm only giving this out at a comics convention, so it's not going to be like, so what are you in? Oh, radial tires. Interesting. All right. I'm putting this card away. I'm saving it.
Like no one's back at their house going, Dave, kill it. ooh, where did I get this card?
I know.
Dave Kellett, who was this guy?
Who, what was it? Was he a life insurance salesman? Can't remember. So, what would a voice box, what would a voice bubble imply? Oh my God. I can't remember. So, but yeah, I mean, I've seen guys with, and girls with, their character on it, or a caricature of the cartoonists themselves is often a popular one, but I think it's sort of 1970s.
Yeah. I've seen some with, glamour pictures, glamour shots of the, card carrier, and they were kind of like,
gosh.
Oh, please, no.
Really? You've seen that?
Yeah. The kind that real estate agents have, Chris?
Well, it's like that, except the guy would have, like, frosted tips, and he'd be standing in front of a Ferrari or some nonsense like that.
No, really?
It's like, this is my card. I'm like, all right, I'm never going to speak to you. That's awesome. Thank you for that, because that's I want to know.
That's so useless because, like, Glow and I have this phrase because she works in TV, and we came up with this phrase called the currency of your face. Like, because, if you're an actor, your face has value if you're someone in the public life. But as cartoonists, our faces have zero value. Like, the only thing that has value is what comes out of our hands, you know, the drawings we create. So why in heck would you ever want to put your face on your card? Our faces have no currency at all. Like, no one – 99.9% of Chris's readers, well, maybe Chris because he puts his face on a lot, but all right, my readers don't know what I'm talking about for the most part. I actually didn't mean that as an insult. I just realized that you do a lot of video casts and stuff like that. But
Dave, you need to get out there.
Stop
being so shy.
It becomes an intervention. Dave, you've got to go out of the house. You have got to step out that door. I don't want to, Chris. I don't want to.
The worst business card I've ever seen. I cannot think of this guy's name. Oh, my gosh. He is a guy that is a comic book guy.
Maybe you shouldn't think of his name.
No. It's not. He did this. Ravidactyl. Have you ever? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
He did a book that was supposed to be a movie, and I think he like filmed it himself. And it had Turk from Scrubs in it.
Oh.
It's the guy Beyond Comics is the name of his company.
Well, what
and God, what is his name? I can't think of it. But Civilian Justice was the name of the comic, and it's like you said, he's got a real tight black shirt on, and he's got long black hair and a ponytail, and he's up against a sports car. And, like, you know how when Image first got popular, people would send in fan art and they would publish the fan art in the back of the book, like on the letters page?
Yeah.
Well, he did one of those for Spawn, and I guess McFarlane published it on the letters page. And so, like, on his business card, it said, pinup artist for Spawn.
Come on.
And, yeah. But there's a trailer for Ravidactyl, and,
you know what?
He's the star of Ravidactyl.
I think that another piece of advice would be there are so many people faking it, and that's kind of the reason why I wouldn't put President Nightlight Press on my business card, because there are so many people faking it like that. That
yeah.
I think the instant if I get handed a business card that says President, I don't want to. I know it doesn't matter because he wouldn't be talking to me.
No, and people see through that immediately.
Yeah, and it immediately makes you look dumb.
And, if I can add to that, Chris, in addition to ridiculous text on your card, it sounds a little bit bourgeois to say, but spend the extra $20 and get them professionally printed. Don't use the kind that you can print out with the little
the perforated ones, yeah.
Yes, and don't do the ones that you can do, you're cutting it out on your color home printer and stuff like that. It reeks of I'm still living in my mom's basement or that sort of thing. It may not even be true. You may be running a great company, but you just did terrible business cards. The unfortunate thing is the image that you present, and we're not an industry that's about image. We don't have to wear suits. We don't have to do any of that. But the pieces of paper that we carry, whether it's our books or whether it's our prints or whether it's our business cards, it does have an impact whether you like it to or not, and it makes an impression. So
right.
Just don't use the cheapo ones.
I would like to also give out a piece of advice that may not make me popular when it comes to your business cards. Don't give them to anybody unless they ask for it. All right? Like, there's no need for you to walk up to some guy, initiate a conversation, and then say, here's my card. You know? I mean, if you guys have a conversation and the person says to you, we should stay in touch, do you have a card? Have them there. But I think, I know that when I get home especially from Comic-Con, I've got hundreds of business cards, and they all go in the trash. You know, I do, because people just hand me their card. I didn't ask for it, and there's nothing I can, what am I going to do with them? There's nothing I can do with them, you know?
I don't remember if you were at that same dinner, but it must have been two San Diegos ago, but somebody gave me a card that was made of beveled aluminum.
Yes!
And it was laser etched. And it was a black painted aluminum that was laser etched, so the letters were all the metal color. And I was like, this doesn't even fit in my wallet.
But did it also act as a tool of some sort?
No, it was just a metal piece of metal.
Well, no, Chris, it could be a screwdriver in an emergency, right?
Well, I guess, yeah.
Provided you don't need a Phillips.
No, Chris, I'm telling you, you showed me that card and we laughed about how, oh, check this out. This is doubles as like something. And then you went, oh, is that why that part's cut like that? And I'm like, yeah, it's like it doubles as a screwdriver, a bottle opener or something.
I'll always remember this guy when I need to get screwed. That's awesome.
You know what? I appreciate your advice on this, guys. I'm gonna keep three words in my repertoire as I put my business card together. Hell fucking Vetica.
No.
Simple design. Yes.
Gotham.
Not Gotham. Helvetica, no, brother.
Gil Sands. Come on.
Gil Sands. No, there's too
and,
many.
And a doff of the cap for the clean tag, though.
All right, Futura. Come on, just a little bit.
Yeah, but see, like now we're getting into the snotty design thing. Like, like let's get snotty now, because guys, let's be honest. When someone hands you a business card and it's overtly cartoony, like they used some comic craft font, or it's like a big pow with an exclamation, but it's their name.
Yeah.
Don't you just want to like crumple it up and throw it in their face and say no?
No. Well, that's just it. Is that your card needs to be professional and not gimmicky?
That's
every card that we've
that...
come down on tonight has been. Just a big show-off bunch of nonsense.
Yeah. It's not – the thing is, it's your card is not your work. Your card is your professional what's the way to say it? It's your professional face. You
it's
know,
your professional card.
I'm realizing that was my card. But you know what? One piece of advice, though, that we're woefully missing here is, Chris, I think you were with me. This was three San Diego Comic-Cons ago. And there was an editor coming around from the Japanese version of, I think it was Shonen Jump or something. Do you remember this? And this
no.
was we were at Blank Label. And for whatever odd, oh, maybe they weren't. No. It wasn't. It was a mid-level Japanese publication. I don't even remember what the name was. And for whatever reason, I think I initiated it because I wanted to follow up with a question about the Japanese market to him. And so we traded cards, and I completely forgot that Japanese custom that you have to examine the card as though you're examining the person's life, so you have to treat it with respect and all.
What?
That.
What are you talking about?
Have you never traded business cards with a Japanese person before?
No.
No. What are you talking about?
When I was
seriously, now I'm worried I've offended
somebody.
That
sounds like
somebody.
A setup of a joke.
Yeah,
no,
seriously.
No. When I was at Mattel, every once in a while we would do business because we used to own a Japanese – well, they own a Japanese subsidiary, and we trade cards every once in a while. And the Japanese custom is when you hand – like if Chris were to hand me my card, I have to read over every word on the card – and then acknowledge what the sacrifices kind of were to get Chris to that point in his career that
no.
he became. I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding you about that. So it's you know, I'm sure someone will email and say, well, this is coming out of Samurai Killer where you have to acknowledge the sword. But it's essentially it's a sign of respect to the person that you're talking to that you value their experience, you value their career, you value their sacrifices that they made to get to that point.
So you started picking your teeth with it.
No, is that he was reading mine and almost gave just the ever so slightest little tip of a bow after he got done reading it, and I had already pocketed it and was still looking at him, and I was like, oh, totally forgot. Anyway,
you know what? You know what it's time for? Whip up some crocodile tears. Just start crying and go, I had to put it down. It was beautiful.
I, as quickly as I could, I built a little shrine to his card off to the back.
Your life is incredible.
Your life is great. So for all the people out there that are hoping for a career in manga, just remember when you're trading Japanese business cards to show the card respect. That's my useless tip for the day.
Good job.
I think it'd been great if he'd looked at him and said, hey, man, listen, I'm all for customs, but you're in the United States of USA now, all right? Feudal America, no one gave a damn about business cards, so.
Or even better, at the end, I go, Junior Vice President?
Ooh. Right, or you go, ooh, where'd you get this done, Vistaprint? Yeah.
You just look at it and shake your head.
Yeah, well, keep working, buddy. Keep working. Another 30 years.
You'll make it.
Gosh, yeah, that's a good tip. I had no clue.
You know what? You hand him $5.
Is it a good tip, though, Scott, or did I just regale people with a useless bit of knowledge? I think I just regaled people with a useless bit of knowledge. I don't know.
Look, Dave, we know that Japanese people love you. You don't have to brag about it every podcast. Take it easy.
One country. Well, let me ask you guys: do you guys do well at all in Japanese as far as your hits? Because I don't get any traffic from.
No, there. I don't really either. The people who read me there are people who have moved there to be English teachers and stuff like that. Yeah.
I get far more traffic from China than I do from Japan.
I think you're really obsessed with these like Asian markets. Like I have never once looked at. I wouldn't know who looks like at what. I think maybe once in a while I'll say when I'm putting a package together, I'll be like, wow, this is going to South Africa. That's crazy that anybody not down the street, you know, cares about my work. But like you guys check out. All right. How are things with my Asian market?
No, but you've never gone in and be like, wow, two hits from Mozambique. Who's reading in Mozambique? I wonder. You know, that sort of thing.
No,
you've never really drilled down to the very bottom of your server logs and be like, wow, really?
I'm gonna start
no,
looking.
No, you can
sit
like
here.
I'm curious as to where you're seeing like where do you see that information?
This is not, just so you know, this is not like I'm doing this every day. I think I did this like 3 years ago. I had a slow day and I was like, you know what? Where are people coming from? And I was like,
well, that's how you put it, Dave. You're like, hey guys, are you guys finding that you get a lot of traffic from Japan? And we're
are you
like,
keeping up on that?
Yeah, that's how you put it. We're kind of like, yeah. I mean, the last time I checked, my work in the Asian market is hot stuff right now.
We just start making stuff up.
I just find it very interesting that, like, because the French and Belgian markets are very similar to, even though it's obviously French-speaking, but they're very similar in style. But I just find it fascinating that as an American or Canadian or Western cartoonist, there is no way in hell you're breaking into the Japanese market. They could just give less of a care for most Western work.
Yeah,
and it's this huge market. I mean, people do instruction manuals, they do employee books, they do you know everything in cartoon form, and there's not a nary a Westerner.
Hey, Whip, you know what? I'm looking at Google Analytics right now, and my visits from Japan actually are about three times my visits from China. But guess what? One reader in Myanmar.
Right,
So I got him.
You got that Myanmar market locked up.
Nepal, one guy also.
By the way, Chris, don't ship to Myanmar. My advice to you.
Sorry, buddy.
You're not getting that Star Slip Volume 2. All right, so who's got the next question? I think Chris had one. Yes? Who?
Yeah, let me do this one.
Well, this kind of melds into Chris's question, I think.
Yeah,
kind of as well.
This has been a very useful podcast for San Diego. All right.
Nice segue.
This question is from Adam Levermore Rich. And he says,
ooh,
hi, guys.
Another good last name, by the way.
Exactly. Very fancy. Hi, guys. With San Diego Comic-Con coming up, can you talk a little bit about networking, especially at cons? I'm pretty new to the community, and I'd like to make some connections with other artists while I'm there. But as an attendee, I don't have the advantage of the built-in camaraderie of having a table set up next to another artist, etc. How do the four of you feel about people approaching you at cons with the intent of networking? Is it time you'd rather spend attracting new readers and customers, or is it something you welcome? And he has a website at savehiatus.com, a webcomic. But I think that is a very good question. How do you feel about people coming to the table with where they're not a reader? They're like, I am another cartoonist. I got this piece of work. Maybe I want a critique done. Mm. That type of thing.
Bleh.
I will let Scott
That
start
is
on this
your
one so
answer, Adam.
that I don't look like Johnny Malocchio here.
Joe, first of all, I cannot believe you just said Malocchio.
Wow, that's a great word. I
I
love
know, no,
Malocchio.
I know it is my. I mean that. Dude, I'm gonna cry that you just said Malocchio. Like that is a word that was thrown around my house all the time, and I thought that was a only my Italian relative said it. You know Malocchio?
Sure.
You know the evil eye?
Sure.
Dude, we are brothers.
Even though I'm of Irish ancestry, the Irish have something similar. I don't remember what the word is in Irish, but you can definitely give someone the evil eye in Ireland. But
Oh, dude,
the
that is
Italians,
awesome.
the Italians have a much stronger version of the Malocchio, man. It's like 7 years of bad luck if someone gives you the Malocchio.
Gosh, that's awesome. I'm torn because there's a part of me that remembers when I was a kid and I wrote to Jim Davis, like for a question, and I got nothing back. And I was like, "What if I ever become a cartoonist? I will answer all the questions that are sent to me. I will never do that to somebody. I won't." And now I'm
I'm
at a
sad for the
con.
9-year-old Scott Kurtz there, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm here all week.
He's watching his Thundercats, he's crying, he's eating his Cheerios.
If Lionel were here, I'd send him to Muncie.
You know what? Once I'd like to see Mum-Ra win.
And then he'd really, and then Jim Davis would really hate Mondays. What? Did that tickle you? That got him.
Because I can picture you over the desk writing feverishly with your tongue stuck up in one corner of your mouth.
What, like a Charlie Brown
Yeah, like,
cartoon?
And also, you sort of have a lisp. Dear Mr. Davis, I'm waiting about my cartoon strip that I would like you to create for me.
Wow. Hey, nothing's better than when you guys mock my childhood pain. Anyway, yeah, so, I mean, there's a big part of me that is kind of, I don't want to say like a slave to that, but like that's a big thing. And then there's another part of me that feels that I think there's a lot, I'm approached by a lot of people, especially at cons, that I feel kind of cross the line in what they expect of me. I'm certainly not in a position to give anyone a job. So it's not like when, people approach, 'cause one of the things I get a lot when I say, "Hey, I don't really critique, I'm not into that. Who am I to judge your work?" They're like, "Well, this is a comic book convention. You're supposed to bring your art and get it critiqued." No, I understand that, but you're supposed to do that with people that are in a position to give you a job. I'm not in a position to give you work, so there's no need for you to show me your work. But oh, it's tough. That's a tough one.
I guess that makes sense because I think a lot of your problem might stem from the somebody coming up to you thinking that somehow getting your seal of approval is going to make it, is going to change everything.
That'll be the difference.
Yeah. So they want to come up and they want to get that stamp from you, believing that you're going to whisk it away to Image, and they're gonna go, "All right, that sounds good. Let's take it to press, boys." And then it'll be the whole da 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 da,
Yeah,
and then
you
they're
know what?
famous.
Maybe
So wait,
that's their approach. Maybe they think I'll put in a good word for them at Image.
maybe. Yeah, I mean I suppose that's the secret hope, but I think I personally think down deep, and this is going to sound so philosophical as to be almost cheesy, but I think people just want to know that they matter. And if they're not getting it from their family, and if they're not getting it from whatever small readership they get, it means so much to them to get it from a re or an artist that they respect.
Yeah, but the problem I have, Dave, is that when I give them my honest opinion, they don't know what to do from that point on. They're just like, "Oh," they're almost shocked that I had an opinion. Like, "Oh, wait, you're telling me what this is like?"
Well, and it's unfortunate because I got people mad at me this week in the Half Pixel forums because I said I don't want to do critiques in a public setting, or not in a public setting, but at a convention. And the retort back was, "Hey, you can't do a public podcast on how to make web comics and write a book on how to make web comics and not expect people to ask for critiques." And my position was, "Well, of course I can appreciate and expect why people would want to ask me a critique, given the fact that we do a podcast and a book. But I don't think it's unfair of me to say that I really, on a personal level, don't enjoy doing critiques of other artists, especially not with no context of their abilities or their life or their background, and to have to do it in 5 minutes on a quick read of their 30-page portfolio. I absolutely hate doing that, and I don't think it's fair to them nor me to do it."
Has someone really said that to you, that they don't feel like because you do the podcast that you have the right to refuse a critique?
In varying words, yes. And I
Because
my attitude.
I would think that the fact that we do the podcast and
That frees us from
well,
having
that
to do it.
yeah, I think that gives us much of more of a right
Well,
to
Scott, can I honest, Scott, I want to remind you guys, when we first started this book, one of the reasons why we did it is we were saying to ourselves, we keep getting asked the same 100, 150 questions. Let's to serve the greatest possible good, let's put it in book form and get it out to thousands of people rather than having to answer every Tom, Dick, and Harry that comes up to the booth, And I personally think that that serves a greater good to give all that information out in book form.
Yeah, it's like, guys, maybe this should be our new motto. If someone comes like, "Hey, what do you think about?" We'll just go buy the book.
Well, that's what Brad does. Brad's awesome. So I saw him do that at Emerald City a couple of times. They're like, "Well, how do I get a JPEG into buy the book? You might want to check it out. Buy the book." Because Brad hates it even more than I do.
You
But
know
I mean,
what?
here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. Whenever anybody asks any one of the four of us, I've seen. Oh, I haven't seen Scott, but actually, I know I have seen Scott. Every one of us I've seen has tried to be nice about it because we've all been that artist in not necessarily asking the question, but we've all been where that artist is right then, Just wanting to know that you're making progress and you're doing good and you're not wasting, all this effort. So it's not like we don't understand it. The thing is, when you're doing one-on-one individual critiques, that to have value, that takes time and it takes follow-up and it takes context. And it needs a teaching environment. Like if I'm going to give you one bit of advice on your art or your writing or anything like that, it's going to be one tidbit of advice that really almost amounts to I don't want to say uselessness, but it's the signal to noise ratio is very small on that,
Yeah, I'm not ready to say don't approach me for a critique yet. Maybe I'll get there after this con. Actually, that'll probably happen. But I do
Yeah, now it
remember.
is.
Yeah, now
You're
it's
the one guy
Chris
who's
is the one
ever.
holdout.
Chris
So
will
yeah,
talk to you.
you
That's
know
what I'm
what?
just
You
gonna
know
say.
what? Go ahead and inundate me, and let's see what happens.
All right, well,
Oh,
let's do that.
God, Chris,
Chris
what have
Straub
you
will
done?
Chris Straub will take critiques.
I'm gonna open that gate. But here's the thing: I'm gonna try really hard to be honest, which is difficult because you don't want to be the guy to be like, "Yeah, I don't see a lot here," because the biggest problem that I have with somebody coming up and asking for a critique, and somebody did that to me once, was where you have a hard time finding enough good to balance that, because you always need to say something nice and you need to say something where they need to improve. But it was almost like, this guy is not asking me for a critique. He's asking me for a blessing because
Yeah, he's asking
he's
you for
spent so
approval.
much time on
Right.
it that there's he's not
Right.
going to change it, even if I did say what he should do.
Yeah.
And no matter how many times someone says, "No, give me your honest opinion," there's always that part of you that's like, "You don't want it. You don't want my honest opinion. If I do this
Yeah.
to you, this is going to be painful for both of us."
Chris, I think you were there when I did that one time, weren't you?
I don't know. Maybe.
And I don't think the guy took it very well. He was not happy
Was it the
with
one where the art, well, this could describe a lot of them, but was it the one where the art was really kind of confused as far as background and foreground, and there was a lot?
No, it was a specific one where the art were photographs he took. Do you remember that?
Oh, I don't remember that. The pain is evident
But
as you remember.
yeah, it was tough.
Can I put another idea out there, and you guys can tell me if this is me being a huge, massive jerk or not. So one of the reasons why we wrote the book, I think, is because obviously, we've made more than our fair share of mistakes and continue to make them in our career, and we're humans and we're artists, and we want to help other people learn from it. And I'm serious about this. I think one of the things that marks a successful artist is the ability to have an editorial eye of your own work. And in as much as Scott might look at my stuff and say, well, here's what you're doing wrong, Dave, the bottom line is if I can't get there myself 90% of the time, that I'm not going to make it as a cartoonist or as an artist at all. You know, you have to know what's going right and wrong in your writing, in your art, in your painting, in your sculpting, in your textile work. Like, if you can't figure out what's going wrong, on some level, no amount of teaching can help you get there.
I don't know, Dave, because I was just going to say, yeah, you know what would actually take a lot of the edge off would be to have somebody come up with their work and say, hey, would you critique this? And here are the things I'm already aware that I need to fix up, that where I need work. But, you know, on top of that, can you give me more? And that would then at least say that they're being critical of their own work. But on the other hand, you have a lot of people coming up, a lot of cartoonists, and this is just kind of a condition of the breed. They come up and their work is awesome, and they go, "Yeah, I know that this is off center and this doesn't work," and this is, and you want to shake them and say, "No, it's good." So,
well, I want to follow up on that though, Chris. Do you honestly get people coming up and you're like, "Wow, this is great art"?
I do. At Comic-Con, I get at least one or two where they come up and it's just like, you're just whoa.
There are some. Yeah, there are some. They're not they're not the majority, but yeah.
Well, okay, then I must not be remembering that.
But they don't have a business card and they're not asking for critiques, you know?
Who?
Well, then
a lot of times I'm flipping through their... Or I was just going to say, a lot of time they're asking me for a sketch and I'm like, wow, who did this one? They're like, me.
Oh.
Me. Like, there's a guy named Dale Norvell that lives here,
yeah,
Chris.
Yeah.
And
I've seen his stuff.
Yeah, and we're at a little sketch club, and he's sitting there staring at me, and he goes, hey, do you mind if you look at my work? And I'm like, yeah, let's take a look. And he pulls out this stuff, and I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, what? Hey, did you use grease pencils for these? And he goes, no, what are those? And I said, you know, this is grease pencil, right? And he goes, no, it's a number two pencil. And I went, what do you mean? He goes, a number two pencil. I go, I don't understand. What's a number two pencil? And he held up a number two pencil. He had never been to art school. He didn't know anything about it. He'd never been to an art store. And
yeah.
He's drawing. He could be a cover artist for Marvel or DC.
No, yeah. He was awesome.
Yeah, it happens every once in a while.
But well, the more I'm thinking about this, though, the more I'm realizing that I may be more curmudgeonly than you guys, just because I never have asked in my entire career an artist for their opinion on my work.
Well,
aside
look,
friends,
I me neither, but I'm terrified.
Friends,
I don't want to hear that.
Oh, really? I asked you guys tonight about an upcoming strip.
When was the last time you guys heard me asking about an upcoming Sheldon?
Yeah, never. That's what I'm saying.
I guess
you're making me realize I'm feeling awful now. I'm feeling very sad.
And maybe that's why, and because I'm generally, and you know, even when people ask me for a critique, I give kind words, because you know, what else can you do? But generally, maybe one of the reasons why a normally sympathetic guy like myself is not so sympathetic here is because I just have never seen that as the path to improvement. I don't know.
If I want to
get better at art, I take an art class. You know, and obviously for financial reasons and geographical reasons, that's not possible for everybody. I understand that, but there are online courses now. There are fantastic.
Well,
books
wait a minute,
by
wait a minute. Isn't that the same as asking for someone's opinion? How?
No. That's very different in my mind, Scott. A teacher can work with you over weeks and months and follow your progress and get a context for your abilities and
I see what you're saying and
can craft and tailor their responses to your experiences, and it's a good teacher crafts their teaching to the student, and you can't do that in a critique, you know.
No, I see what you're saying.
A con critique is sort of a really bad shallow beauty contest. Hey, am I good looking enough? And what am I supposed to say? Yeah, you'll do well. You'll marry young. Anyway, so a con critique is just sort of it. To me, it's all the shallowness and lack of depth and that will not help a career. It's just it's more an emotional question than it is a genuine artistic question. You know, it's the do I have value? Tell me I matter. Tell me I'm pretty. Tell me I'm, and that's all people want to hear. And I totally understand that from a human level, but. From an artist to artist level, I'm of very little use to you because A, I'm still figuring out my art, and B, I'm not good at one-on-one instruction for artistry, which I think is important for critiques. And C, I don't know that we have the time or the context or the place to give a value to the to this thing that you want at a convention, you know?
I mean, I think that's the best argument for not wanting to give a critique at a con I've ever heard, is that it's just, it's not good for the person asking. It, there's no way for you to effectively help them at all.
Right, and then I, there may be also people with the tendency where they are aware of the limited capacity of such a critique. So you go, well, you know what, I would change this panel layout, and I don't really think that this works. And then they'd go, oh, you, no, I know that. No, I've got, I've changed that. So critique something else. And then they're just going to counter every critique you have with, no, that's not a problem anymore. I've changed that. It's better. And then what do you say to them? Well, then you're fine. Then you're the greatest artist I've ever met.
You know what, though, and maybe this will counteract it, so I don't seem like Ebenezer Scrooge today. Is that I think one thing that's very fair to ask at a con critique is a really specific question that maybe the book didn't cover or the podcast didn't cover that can be handled in a concrete amount of time. By that I mean like 2 to 5 minutes. That would really help your writing or your artistry or something like that. You know, like, how do you do word bubbles, Chris or Scott? How do you do – is there a way to shading that I should think about when I'm trying to do it? You know, like, that's a great question at a con.
Yeah, but then you guys would just say, get the book.
No, but, like, what you're suggesting is
Well, like, I can't give a summarizing thought to your whole portfolio in 2 minutes of looking at it, 10 minutes of looking at it. But what I can do is if you flip to page 28 of your portfolio and say, check out this panel. All right, I'm really having trouble with my shading or the way the light is falling here. What should I do? And then I say, all right, well, how about this, you know, that sort of thing. I think that might be a workable solution at a convention. It's just the time allotment and the noise and the distraction and the lack of context and the lack of follow-up and the lack of, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like the environment of choice to do something of a value to another artist's career. I don't know.
No, I think that what you're saying makes a lot of sense. Like, if someone comes up and says, so how do you make your word bubbles? That is not the same as coming up and saying, what do you think about my strip?
Yeah.
You know, right. How do you make your word bubbles is a very...
You can answer it in a discreet way.
Yeah, and it's... But also, and I think this is what... I'm starting to kind of grok what it is that bothers Dave. It's really devoid of this kind of implied tension, this putting on the spot of the artist. Like, all right, here I am. Make me or break me.
Solve my life. You know,
yeah, solve my – yeah, this is it. This is what I've been waiting for. You know, it's this weird thing they're putting on you. Or as opposed to saying, hey, how do you get such clean lines? And then you say,
oh,
well,
no.
I zoom in real close.
You're right. Maybe I rescind my offer. It's too late.
Well, but Chris, I don't think I've ever seen you, and I don't think I've ever seen me. When someone comes up and asks us, we've never refused, I don't think, at a convention, have we? We've never said, no, we really don't do that.
There's always something to say.
We do it, but I hate doing it. There's just no context. There's no depth. There's no – I don't know. I think maybe I'm restating, you know – old points, and Scott, maybe you're right. I think the capstone is just that it lacks the context, it lacks the depth, it lacks I don't know, it's just not the format for it. And now I'm definitely repeating old points, so I'll shut up and stop.
So you heard him. Everybody email your portfolio to David.
No, don't do that.
Well, it's also I guess, not to make this a broader question, but as artists, one of the reasons I think the book is of value is because ultimately, as a cartoonist, you have to be self-sustaining both in your own ego and in your own work, because this is a business that will on some levels beat you down for the night after night of work. And so if you need constant shots in the arm, that might be a sign of trouble anyway. I don't know.
Well, I mean, listen, I've been on the other foot, right? So how many of you have ever asked, you know...
Somebody for...
Have you ever asked somebody for the advice that we're now hoping that we are not asked?
Well,
Because
I think
I know I have. For sure I
I
have.
think it has to do with what Dave was saying, where I haven't asked because I kind of feel like I know what they're going to say. My art is really kind of stiff and a little overly simplistic, and like I kind of can kind of go to the places what I would need to fix, and it would
Right.
crush me to hear it from somebody.
What do you
What
mean?
do you mean? What do I mean? I mean, I would find it very difficult to actually hear it.
But that's what I was saying before, though, Chris, is that you already have the editorial eye. You know what is already lacking or is not necessarily lacking, but falling short in your art, as do I, as does Scott. In our heart of hearts, we already know. And I think that's the skill that you have to cultivate. Even as much as your drawing and your writing abilities, you have to cultivate that editorial eye on your own work. And that's why the book is helpful, because I think it tries to impart sort of a self-guided career,
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm realizing that I'm walking a fine line with being insulting and not being
No,
insulting. I'm
you're
trying. I'm
listen, don't I there's no reason for you to worry about insulting anybody. Look, if you're worried about getting an email from someone that said, I asked you a question one time and now I know why you turned me away, blah, 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 blah. There's no need to worry about that. I mean, this is stuff we deal with all the time, so there's no reason to be
Well, I'm
scared about
also very,
discussing it.
I'm also very aware, as I'm saying all of this, that artists are by nature insecure and are introverted and are shy. So the very fact that they've come up to ask me at a convention means they've leaped over so many personal hurdles just to get to that question. And that's why I'm always nice when someone asks, because to me it's like they just want to know that they're okay and that they're doing all right and that they're on the right track. So my standard pattern of advice is to find something good, like Chris said, find maybe one thing to work on. And then just give them the talk of, draw every day, write every day, and that's all you can do.
I
But
mean, this is the same thing we talk about all the time when it comes to people coming up and saying, "Oh, hey, I'm a big fan of your work." And you say, "Oh, thank you very much." And they're like, "Yeah, this is the comic I do." And then they drop a comic book on you and you say, "Oh, cool." And they're like, "Yeah, we should swap books." And you're like, "Oh, yeah, we should. We should take this book I made that cost me, $4,000 to print 4,000 of them." Or 2,000 of them, or whatever, and that I get 12 f to $14 for, and I should just hand one over to you for this thing you made at Kinko's an hour before the con, because we're the same. We're just the same, you and me. We're alike, kindred spirits, and we should sw totally swap these. This is awesome. Let's do that. Do you have any friends that also made stuff behind you at the Kinko's, with spit and paper from grandma's? Anything on graph paper? You have anything on graph paper that we can swap for this plush? Maybe any of the other products that I've made here? I get that attitude in my heart. It bubbles up. And damn it, I'm sick of hiding it.
By the way, I'm walking over to the PvP booth and trading some graph paper for a skull plush. That's awesome.
Or maybe he has a bunch of graph paper out on your table, and he makes it in front of you, and then folds it and goes, "Ah, here's my book.
It's Staples.
Can I get one of
Ka-chunk,
these? And can we grab a plush? And
ka-chunk.
since we're artists trading contact information, I mean, we might as well."
Hey,
You
you
open
guys
it
aren't
up.
gonna you guys aren't gonna back out on me on that, are you? Right?
What do you
'Cause
mean
you
back out?
Well, I mean, 'cause you guys have experienced the same thing, right? So
Oh no, I'm right with you on that. I know
okay.
of what you speak.
No, I
And
don't trade. I don't trade.
I
I
you
you
know
know
what I'm talking about, right? It's
The sad truth is, and this is my attitude with gifts, is that if a gift is not freely given, it's not a gift at all. So if an artist gives me a book, like if a and I've had artists give me really nice books, I mean far nicer than any Sheldon book, beautiful all color all the way through, 200-page books, and I always say, "Oh, thanks." And then they look at me expectantly, and it's like, "Well, I didn't ask you for this book. This was a gift. If you want to give it to me, great, but I'm not giving you a Sheldon book to, and now I'm really sounding like Scrooge McDuck, but anyway, what I'm going with here is that, like, if you want a Sheldon book, buy a Sheldon book. I'm not in the business of giving them out to free, unless I want for a friend or a relative or something like that. This is my livelihood, and I'm not actively just giving them out to everybody I meet,
Yeah, no, that's it's very important that people know that.
And that's why I think, like, when I give Chris a Sheldon book, or when I give someone that I met at San Diego Comic Con 5 minutes earlier. Sometimes I'll meet somebody and they'll just have a residence, and I'll be like, "All right, I want to give you a book." But if I give you a book, that is not a reason for you to feel that you have to give me a book of yours. Mine is a gift freely given, so you can just you know, take it and leave it at that. It's odd. Sometimes I find myself like old man Carruthers at cons in terms of my interior monologue.
But unfortunately, it's a lot like what was I gonna say? If you give one to this guy, then you got to give one to everybody, or vice versa. There's no good way to say, all right, I'm going to trade with him because his book is of a sufficient value that I can do this, but not you.
Yeah, well, I don't even know if you remember this, Scott, but when you and I first met, you offered to give me a PvP book. And I think it was because Chris had introduced us or something. I don't remember what happened. And I was like, no. I believe in supporting artists. I didn't want to take that free gift from you because you're a working artist and that's part of your livelihood. And that's in general my attitude whenever someone tries to give me a book. Is that no? I always say no. I believe in supporting artists.
Yeah, I know. I understand that. And listen, I mean, when there are other professionals that we run up to and they come over, and I mean, we swap books all the time. But that's because we're swapping items of equal value. Like, I know exactly what it cost him to make it and what he's selling it for, and it's identical to what it cost me to make mine and I'm selling mine for, so that's it's a fair swap. Like, we're both going to buy each other's books. I'm going to spend $12 at your booth, you're going to spend $12 at mine, so why don't we just swap the books and skip a step, you know?
Gotcha, yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah.
But there's a difference between, like, Kurt Busiek coming up to the book and saying hello, and I get to say hi to his wife and kids again this year, and you know, someone coming up and handing me, I mean, like, I don't know. This is just going to get me in so much trouble, but...
But I hate comics.
No, it's not that I hate comics. It's so funny because I knew we were going to talk about this tonight, and I was so excited about how I was going to fight Dave on this and be like, oh, David, that's awful. How could you? No, ridiculous. I'm for helping people and discussing things. We should talk to them. And now, I don't know what happened. Maybe I've been drinking. But now it's like, yeah, no, stop bringing me stuff. I don't care about your work. Just buy my book and leave. Leave me be.
That is not what I said. Oh, man, now I'm...
No. Dave, I'm telling you, that's what it feels like I've been saying. You haven't said anything, buddy. Don't worry. It's been Uncle Scott tonight.
I'm gonna put out an amendment to my previous offer. You can
no,
come,
there's no amendment.
You can
you,
come
people,
up to me
no,
and
no,
get,
people,
no, 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 no,
no,
no, no, no. Listen to me.
Everybody can come up to Chris. Come
you,
on,
you
that's
can get
for
you can come up to me and get whatever you want out of me if you buy my books. If you buy everything I have at the table, then you get to come
now,
to my house.
That I don't believe, Dave. I do recall that is the opposite of what he said at the beginning of this podcast.
No, that's not the opposite. That's an addendum. Mm. The opposite would be don't look at me.
I think
talk
it,
to
no.
Me.
No, Chris, you know why? You know why? Because at the beginning of this podcast, you had offered a gift freely given, and now there are conditions.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then that's fine. Then I will continue to freely give it. But be aware that all weekend I will be wearing a Brad Geiger mask. Still free.
You know what? I'm so bummed now that Brad was not on this podcast because I think Brad's curmudgeonliness on this issue would have outshined.
Nope, that's all you.
And now it really is all you.
Now it's shining.
Is it unfair to say, too, that as artists we also have just enough insecurity on our own parts to not want to have to critique someone else? Whatever failings they have in life.
I mean, do you know there's a whole
sure
there's a whole list of professional reasons why people don't do this. Like, we don't even need to come up with reasons. We don't need to justify this. Like, you cannot go up to Brian Michael Bendis and show him your comic. He says, no, legally I cannot do this.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Why? Because it would be idea the possibility of idea theft.
Yeah, no, yeah. He says all the time. Like, I mean, he specifically speaks about writing mostly because people will send him scripts and he'll say, "Can't do it. Cannot do it."
I have the best wife in the world, by the way. She just brought me a fresh latte. Oh man, this is the best way to do a podcast ever.
Wow. Where's our latte?
Wait. I'm sorry, it's not latte, it's English tea. Thank you, sweet. This is Awesome.
Wow.
Oh, man, English tea. Oh, man, a little cream, a little sugar.
English
tea.
Tea
it up. I'm going to tea it up.
Good job.
Everybody's a teeing it up. I said, what?
You know what, Dave? That's not getting you out of this.
Just because I have a sweet wife doesn't mean I'm not a jerk.
All right, guys, I've designed my business card. Nobody's talking me out of it.
Scott Kurtz, curmudgeon.
On the back, it says, do not show me anything. Yeah, it just says Scott Kurtz, and then underneath it says, buy things, walk away.
Well, and that's the unfortunate truth is that's the read that people are going to get off of this. Some people are going to get off of this, is that we're saying buy things, walk away. But I don't think it's that. It's not that. I don't necessarily need you to – if you're a fellow cartoonist, I don't need you to buy something. I just don't –
No, Dave, listen. In all seriousness, all joking aside, the point you're trying to get across, and it is a valid point, is it is unfair not just to you but to the cartoonist doing it. It's unfair – the guy or gal that we're speaking here hypothetically is being unfair to themselves to approach another cartoonist. And maybe without realizing it, there I'll say that in case anyone's going to get their prissies in a bunch. Without maybe even being aware of it, put another cartoonist in a position of solving their problem. You know, it's. I mean, you have to ask yourself if you're going to approach somebody for advice. You know, you have to ask yourself a couple questions. You know, why do I want this person's advice? And what am I going to do with the advice? You know, what am I going to do with this information? Am I going to follow it blindly? Am I going to run it through my filter and take what I think is good and toss away what I don't think applies to me? You know, am I going to be heartbroken if they say something I don't like, but I'm just, you know, pinning my hopes they're going to say what I like? You've got to ask yourself all these questions and to be fair to the person that you're seeking the advice from. And I don't think most people go through that, you know. I mean, there's an etiquette to a lot of things, you know. But I don't think people really ever consider the etiquette that should be implemented when you're approaching somebody at a con.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's good advice for, you know, for us to take too. You know, I mean, there's...
You know what? I'm just realizing something. So let's offer some solutions to someone that does want feedback. I think at San Diego Comic-Con, there's a whole subsection off in one corner, aren't there, where people can get feedback on their art or get portfolio reviews? Isn't that the case?
I don't remember.
Am I misremembering that? Because I think that's – you know, instead of complaining about it, I'm now realizing that what we should do is offer people solutions. I think other solutions are no matter where you are in the United States, and I can say this pretty categorically, if you are in a mid-sized to large town and definitely in an urban center – there are cartooning classes in virtually every community college, whether it be night or day classes. I don't remember. You know, that depends on your local community college. There are online courses. There are obviously, if you have the wherewithal, there are classes and critiques at bigger universities and things like SCAD. I think most classical art training would help you out. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is if you are the artist that needs an outside editor to tell you what you're doing wrong, there are good contextual one-on-one teaching solutions that you can find, and you have to seek those out, and a convention is not the place for it, I think.
Yeah.
Well, let me offer this. Maybe the convention is the place to seek it out, but people just aren't seeking it out the way that they should. Maybe the best way to get critique on your work is to get yourself a booth and put your product on it and see what happens.
See if anybody buys it.
I mean, yeah. I mean, look. I mean, who is it ultimately that it matters likes your work? Other cartoonists, or the public that you're selling this to?
That's very true.
That's very true. Because you know what? Links aside, Scott liking my comic doesn't make my comic better or worse. You know, Scott not liking my comic doesn't make. I mean, let's look at it this way. If XKCD came up to us and asked us for a critique, what would you guys say? And would that make any difference at all to the huge traffic growth that he's had this last year?
It would not make a difference.
There's an audience out there that's ready-made to judge your work. It's interesting, though, because I was reading about this in light of a conversation on The Daily Cartoonist. when we were all growing up, a cartoonist toiled away and honed their craft at a desk by themselves and really never got it published, showed it to some friends and family. And now it's a very different world where you're seeing a cartoonist develop online. You know what I mean? Like, you used to come to know a cartoonist when they were almost fully formed by the time they got syndicated or in print.
Yeah, I was the one that said that. I was the one
oh,
that
you
said,
were the one. Oh,
yeah,
you were the, yeah,
I said,
yeah, yeah. Okay.
Someone was complaining about Comic Sherpa and how it was full of just gullible people that were just idiots and they were not good. And I said, well, look, you know, you can't look at Comic Sherpa as a destination that professionals have set up. It's a destination where amateurs are honing their craft. So where before people that worked on their comic strips did it alone in their house, now they're doing it, they're working on it in the public eye, you know? So it's, this is, I mean, don't you remember the first time you worked on comic strips and you hadn't quite found, you know, your art yet, you hadn't quite found your craft yet, and how it looked, and the only people that really saw it were the editors that you had the courage to send it off to. Well, now everyone
right.
can see it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how you have to look at it. And
I think it's – don't you think, though, Scott, too, that it's a stronger proposition than whatever we had to go through as kids?
I think it's much more of a – I think it's a stricter gauntlet than we had to go through. And I think it's easier – I think it's also harder to dismiss. I mean, look, if you spend 2 weeks coming up with 25 strips and you send that off to one editor and he comes back and says, hey, this isn't very good. It's very easy for you to say, well, that SOB is crazy. He wouldn't know art if it bit him on the ass. But
right,
if you're putting
it
up publicly and everybody hates it, I think it's a lot easier for you to go, well, that did not work. Time to go back to the drawing board and start over.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I was going to take a different tack from it, which is that you know, when you're a cartoonist starting out, like when I think I really started to cut my teeth in high school, we had a little high school paper that came out like once every 4 months or whatever.
Me too.
I remember getting my first cartoons there, and people would like it or dislike it. But even then, it was within the – they were people in the context of my life, so it was still very much in jokes on some level, you know, in the sense that it was often about the high school itself or something. And I think in some ways it's actually – and maybe you're right, Scott, when you say it's a tougher gauntlet. I see what you mean now. But I was going to say it's probably a better critique to have complete strangers either coming or not coming or returning to your site as a young kid to read your comics. I don't know. This is an interesting train of thought. I haven't thought about this before.
What was the last part you said?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was trailing off at the last minute because I'm realizing this is a half-formed thought on my part. Is that I'm trying to figure out if it's better for kids nowadays to do it with the web or if it was better the way we did it with sort of an insular community. And
I don't know which is better, but I have a feeling more and more people will do it on the web.
Listen, I think it's there's half of one, six one half dozen of the other, right? Because the problem with it doing it on the web is you would think that it would solve the problem that most cartoonists have growing up, which is when you are the guy that does cartoons, you're the one guy in your high school and your family that is good at art. It doesn't mean you're a good artist. It just means of those people, you're the best. That's the
right.
That was your interest. That's what you always did. It was always
right.
You know, oh, Dave always liked making the cartoons.
Little Scotty loves to draw.
Exactly.
Sort of
so
yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, it's a big deal to the teachers and to the friends and to, oh, I'm going to save this napkin because you're going to be famous one day, you know. And then you meet everyone else, you know, at some point from all the other towns and all the other circles of friends, you know, where they were the one guy that knew how to do that. And now you're competing with those other guys that also know how to do it. And then you're like, uh-oh, crap. You know, I am not the star anymore. There's tons of these guys that are better. And so you would think that if you do that on the net – it would be quicker for a young cartoonist to see the competition and to go through the gauntlet and to get a ton of people outside of their circles of friends and family saying, ah, that's crap, I've seen that a million times before. But I think the flip side of it is that I think it's also very easy, no matter how good or bad your work is, well, no matter how bad it is, to develop enough of a fan base to where you can kid yourself. Right? Because
yeah.
Anyone can get like a couple hundred readers, right?
We've talked about that before, where you get to a certain number, and then you don't want to improve beyond that because you think, well, these people like me. I'm validated. I'm done.
Yeah.
I made it.
But this whole conversation has got me thinking that I want to add a little chapter, if and when we redo, or not redo, but do a 2.0 for how to make webcomics. I want to add a tidbit about the three core skills that a cartoonist needs is not just writing and art, but is the whole idea of a quality editor, and that that can't be something that's external. You have to develop that on your own. Because as we're having this conversation, I'm realizing more and more that's a key attribute to a successful cartoonist.
Oh, I'm so glad you went down that path, David, because I was watching a movie 2 nights ago, and it made me think of something about cartooning, and I thought, oh, I'm bringing that up on the next podcast, and I would have forgotten it. But I was watching a movie called Disney's The Kid. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that
I've heard of
movie.
that. It's got Bruce
It's
Willis and
actually a really cute movie, okay? But the premise of the movie is that Bruce Willis is this image consultant. He's in his 40s. He doesn't have a family. He's very rich. And all of a sudden, this kid shows up at his doorstep, and he figures out that it's him from when he was 8. And him at 8 has somehow showed up on his doorstep of him at 40. And he can't just drop the kid off. The kid is really physically there, and they've got to figure out how to get his 8-year-old self back to his time. And it's all introspective, but there's one scene where he's talking to Jean Smart, and she said, you know, don't be so hard on yourself, because Bruce Willis was talking about how he doesn't know what to tell this kid. This kid's like asking questions like, what do I grow up to become? What, you know, when, where's the plane? Because I become a pilot, and where's my cool dog, right? Because I'm going to get a cool dog eventually. And she said, you can't feel guilty about that. None of us really become what we dreamed we would become when we were kids. No one ever became firemen and policemen and pilots. We all grew up and got real lives. And I turned to Angie and I said, oh man, you know what? I grew up to be exactly what I wanted to be when I was a kid. And every other cartoonist I know that's doing it professionally, they grew up to be exactly what they wanted to be when they were kids. And so, am I missing something? Am I missing an integral life lesson? Like that, there's got to be a moment in a person's life where they give up. They have that little death inside where they give up that dream, that silly dream, and realize, all right, it's time to grow up.
I think
And like, I didn't. I never went through that. And now I'm always questioning it, right? Like I'm missing that. And that's why there's all this self-doubt and anxiety and guilt and all this weird mental illness, you know, surrounding me is because I never went through that moment where I go, all right, it's time to grow up and get a job and settle down. And maybe I'm waiting for that moment to, like, it's chasing me. Like someone who's escaped death, and death is like, no, you were supposed to die. And so you're not dead now, but your life is crap because you constantly have to run from death.
That's
Now I
describing
understand why
being
the
a
concept of
cartoonist, yeah.
now I understand the why the concept of Malocchio was so big in your family too. That's awesome. I understand the philosophy now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was raised, you know, Italian Catholic, right? So,
But that's why, but Scott, that's why, you know, all my harsh words aside, that's why I'm always nice when someone asks me for a critique at a convention and I don't give all that many harsh words out because ultimately my attitude is the reason why, and I go too far in this, but I always create sort of, and Chris does this too sometimes, I create the imaginary life of the person asking me the question. Chris, you know how we play this game sometime where we do voice planting about what their life is and
Yes,
why it's this or
yeah.
that. Chris and I play this game a lot. But I am always imagining them like they wanted to be a cartoonist, but then they got, you know, they had to do that one summer job at UPS, and now they're a mid-level manager at UPS, and they don't really like it, and their marriage is not very good, and they've got the one kid now and the mortgage to pay, and so they can't quit their job, and they still want to be a cartoonist deep down inside. And you know what? I'm going to go ask Chris Straub for a critique of my stuff. So, my God, the least Chris can do is say some kind words, and that's my attitude when someone asks me at a convention, because at the end of the day, I think a lot of people don't really want. the harsh critique feedback. They just want to know that is that you laughing already, Chris? I'm
Well,
sorry.
I'm not laughing, but I'm thinking, what do we do then? Because I know there are some people that actually want a critique. So do you say, right, you say, hold on, before you start, do you want the real critique or do you just want the smoke blown up your ass?
Well, that's why I say it's unfair, because all I can do is assume that they just want kind words, because I don't have time to psychoanalyze them to see what they really want, nor do we have the time, once I do that, to give them the full answer that they need to improve their art and their career in a 5-minute, 10-minute burst. You know, you can't do it. And that's why I say the whole thing is just patently unfair to both parties.
Well, listen, I think you guys are, I just, not to be a fly in the ointment here, but Dave, but there's a downside to just being nice because, I have had people in my lives, in my lives? What? In my lives. I mean, I remember when I was a Quaker.
Yes, thank you,
I was
Shirley
hanging out with
MacLaine. Good job.
Oh, man, you must
So, yeah.
have.
No, but
Same
what I'm
here.
saying is I've had people in my life that ask me that question, like they're in that position and they're like, am I good enough? You know, is this good? And when you say, yeah, man, it's really good, I really like it, and then you get a hold of them a week later, and like, yeah, hey, man, I'm working on this, I'm putting a lot of time into it. My wife's pissed off, and I haven't seen my kids for a little bit, but I'm doing it. I'm back in it. And you're just like, ooh.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's also though the people in the you have context to their life, and so you should be crafting a better answer than that. But I know what you mean. But
But
see,
yeah,
that's the
but
thing is
listen, you
that
could have some kid come
that's
up and
why,
say that.
but that's why it's unfair at a con. Is what I'm saying is that I don't have the context of their life. Did their mom just die, and they just need to know that the cartooning that their mom always used to encourage them at still matters? Did their dad and their mom just get divorced? I'm like, I know you guys are already laughing at me, but that stuff
Jesus,
matters to an artist's
David.
life. Well, would you let me ask you, why would someone ask a complete stranger? I don't know. I see.
David,
This
it's very, very
to me
simple.
runs
No,
this to me runs so
why
deep.
has that
Listen,
become your responsibility
it's
to.
very simple. You're putting the wrong
Because,
spin
Chris,
on it.
that's what I'm saying is it becomes your responsibility, and that's why it's unfair to both parties, because I have to figure out what answer they need, you
David, but
know?
you're looking at the motivations wrong. The motivation is not. It's. If a million people come up and ask you for the advice, maybe 0.5 of them maybe accidentally have the motivation you fear. Most of them, it's ego surfing. It's a live version of looking your name up in Technorati to see if anybody's mentioned you on a blog. That's
Yeah.
all it
Well, this
is.
is.
That's it's not what you think it is.
And well, okay, and that's a totally fair and a valid answer, and I actually believe you that that's the case.
Because 90%
But
of the time, 90% of the time.
Scott, here's the thing though. This is what my brain does, and that's why I ask people to not ask me for critique, is because I instantly go into the, oh God, what's wrong with your life that you're asking me? Why are you asking me? Why do I have to solve your life for you? Oh God, don't ask me this. And so I give and I'm just saying that's my personality, is that. Because I would never ask someone for a critique of my art, I'm suddenly thinking, what tragedy has befallen your life that you're asking a stranger? You know what I mean? Like, you have no network you can turn to for advice or input that you're asking a stranger?
But you know what? Some strangers give
And
the
I'm
best,
just being honest with
most
you.
real
That's
advice, though. It's not if you, like I better ask my mom. Well, she's
But
gonna love it.
they're not strangers to you. They're not strangers to you. I
No,
mean,
you're
listen,
right.
I
They're not
remember.
strangers to me, but I'm a stranger to them.
Right.
Or vice versa. I know what
Yeah.
you're saying there.
But
Yeah, I know what
I
you're saying.
remember, the 1995 San Diego Comic-Con. I brought my Captain Amazing ash can up and showed it to a bunch of people. And one of the people I showed it to was Sergio, and I got what I wanted out of it. He looked at it and said, "This is really nice. Your line art's really clean. You could go work for Cartoon Network." And that's all I wanted. I didn't want any advice. I've talked to him since then. I think it was like 1 or 2 years later, and he goes, "Did you work on your hands?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "Well, you're the guy that drew the thing with the yellow book." And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "And I told you to work on your hands." I don't remember him telling me to work on hands, because I got what I wanted out of that. I got to
Right.
ego surf. I showed up. I showed him my work. Sergio said a kind word. Everyone around me heard it, and I got to walk off and go home and say, my hero liked my work. I was probably walking off as he was saying, "Work on your hands."
What? That's fascinating for me to hear, because I honestly, God, think that Sergio is one of the nicest people in comics. So it's interesting to hear how he actually does give pointed critiques then.
Yeah, no, and the guy that was with me reminded me, yes, he held his hand up in the shape of a gun because you had drawn it where the guy was shooting the gun, but his trigger finger was actually behind his other fingers, and that's not how it should look. You know, the trigger finger is in front of the other fingers because it's out. And I'm like, I don't remember that. He's like, well, no, you were high on life. He had just told you should go work for Cartoon Network. You were floating. I had to pull you down from the air. But that's what people coming up and asking you for a critique are doing. They're not literally interested in what you have to say. Or I guarantee you 90% of the people, you know what?
Like
that's
you.
An incorrect statistic. 98% of the people that ask for your critique, if it's good, they are just going to take away the feeling of the high they felt. And if it's bad, they're just going to dismiss it. But what you actually said is, you know,
immaterial. I think,
yeah,
but I think the danger is not the people who don't get what they wanted and they dismiss it. I think the danger is the people who don't get what they wanted and they want to argue with you. And then they're going to stand there and be like, well, no, because I did it this way. And
you clearly have had that happen, Chris, because you've mentioned that twice now.
Yeah. Has that happened to you?
No, I personally, it has not happened to me, but I am really
good
at
that.
I'm good at imagining awkward interactions. That's the problem.
Chris, has that happened to you? It has. Well, describe it to us. What happened? Well, I told Frank Cho that he was full of shit, that my line work was great, and he just wanted to argue the point. And I'm like, Mr. Cho, you have very clean line work, but I'm telling you that I purposely make mine sketchy to be different from you, and he just would not listen to me.
Otherwise, we would be confused easily, and that's how it
works. You know what's funny, though, Chris? What's funny, though, Chris, is that we've both been revealing in our answer of how it could go awkwardly. Like, your awkward foreseeable situation is that someone would argue with you about your opinion, and my awkward situation is that they're at a crushing moment in their life, and whatever critique I give is the straw that broke the camel's back. Like, but isn't that telling that as artists we're worried about how it could go bad? Like, that's why it's also unfair is that there's an artist on the other end of the table too. You know?
No, I'm the
only
one.
Yeah, but
David,
I mean, you need to get some therapy, man. You're picturing someone back at the hotel that night loading a gun and crying.
But listen, this is part of my and we can talk about this on another show. This is part of my creative process. Is I'm constantly running through monologues of people that I'm passing on the street or seeing at a coffee shop. I mean, ask Chris. I do this all the time.
I can't help doing it either.
Chris is. I thought you and I had played it too, but I constantly play this game, and I think it's actually. It's enriching from an artistic perspective. You're right. It's probably dangerous from a.
Do you want to know when I play that game the most? I play it the most when I haven't been there in a while, but when I'm in Westwood, the college town, and all those young kids are walking very slowly in front of my car, and I'm trying to get into the parking lot or out of the parking lot, and then if my brother's there, he and I go, "Oh my God, my life is so wonderful! Everything is amazing! Oh, we're having so much fun, and we're young, and we're spending our parents' money," and that's what drives me crazy.
So, old man strong.
So I hate those kids. Don't walk in front of my car.
Well, we should label this the curmudgeon episode. This is great.
That's funny. I did that in Seattle with Koo. We were driving and he was dropping me off back at my hotel and there was this girl walking in front of us and I went, "Oh, wow, look at me. None of my clothes match because I bought them all at a thrift shop, but not because I'm poor, but because it's hip, because I don't give into the corporate crap of labels and stuff. I want real clothes, and my knapsack's made out of hemp, and I'm wearing glasses because they're aesthetic. I don't even need them. I got 20/20 vision, and I'm going to college, and even though I got a Prius, I'm walking, so it looks like..." And he goes, "Wow." And I go, "Oh, people like that just drive me crazy." And he goes, "That's Seattle, dude. That's here. You want to move here?" And I said, "Well, yeah, because the people that annoy me here are much better than the people that annoy me in Texas." And he's like, "Well, what would it be like if we were in the car in Texas?" And I would have been, "Oh, look at me. I can't wear a shirt that's big enough to cover my gut. I hate everyone that's a different color or a different religion. Homosexuals are ruining my marriage. And Christian gods and Jesus, I love everybody except for, you know..." Oh, God.
Hey, come on.
Gambling's wrong.
Scott.
But trucks are big.
You defused my joke with that. That's on the that's a state motto. Gambling wrong, trucks are bait.
Chris, I was driving past David McDavid Honda where you bought your car.
Yeah.
And he's got an inflatable custom made wide track as tall as the goddamn building. And I drove by it and I saw it. And I just looked at my steering wheel and I was like, God damn it, Texas. Like, I was mad at the state.
And then, yes, and the state would go, what's wrong? It's fine, right? That's funny, right? I like it.
And then, no, the state would pat me on the back, not even acknowledge that I had made a point and go, everything's bigger in Texas, even your curmudgeonness, Scott. Woohoo! Then shoot in the air.
No, right, no, Texas would slap you on the back of the head and then look up at it and start a tear would roll down his cheek. And he'd go, 9/11.
That, yeah, we're like, come on, Scott, come on into David McDavid. You don't even need to buy a car. I'll give you beer. So we support our troops.
Keep America rolling.
Keep America rolling on David McDavid's.
David McDavid.
McDavid.
Oh.
All right.
So, all right, let me change gears because there's one last thing I want to talk to you guys about.
All right, we let's
make it quick.
I ain't putting any musical interstitials in this. It's just going up.
It's going solid. I have never watched How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. Have you guys ever seen this DVD?
No.
Oh, yeah. A long time ago.
So I'm on Netflix this week, and I typed in comics and cartoons to see what they had. And I was like, oh, How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. So I got it on Netflix, and it came. And I watched it, and first of all, it was clearly made in the VCR era, because Stan Lee is like, all right, now's the time you want to hit pause. I can't do Stan Lee, but, you know, go ahead and hit pause on your VCR. So that sort of thing, right? So it's filmed with this really bad mid-80s quality.
Yeah.
But I have to talk to you guys about John Buscema has the telegenic quality of a piece of styrofoam. And I was just like, this is so awkward. Because Stan Lee, at least, is, for all his, you know, braggadocio, is at least personable and telegenic. And
Excelsior!
But John, God bless him for being such a great artist. It was painful to watch. He was like, he was so clearly reading from the cue cards. And when you're using the brush, you want to hold it with a firmness, but still loosen your hand. Kind of like you do with a whiskey. You know, it was like that sort of thing.
I got to look this up on YouTube.
Anyway, so you have to rent it on Netflix or on Blockbuster or something this weekend because just watch it for about 10 minutes and it's awkward as heck because Stan Lee is so clearly just kind of going, you know, off the cuff. He's like, all right, now we're going to turn into penciling. And then they go to John, they cut to John, and he's so clearly reading from a 10-foot camera right off camera.
It's just nerves.
And you can see, I don't know if you guys like to do this sort of thing, but when I know that someone's line is coming up, I like to watch their body language, and you could see John's shoulders tensing up as he's like, here comes my line, here comes my line, here comes my line. Oh, God. And that's why you draw it the Marvel way. Oh, it's over. Oh, God. And it's just instant flop sweat on his forehead. I was like, oh, this is so awkward to watch. Oh,
that is awesome. Gosh. That is awesome.
I've actually seen that video. I've seen that DVD. There's also a whole series of DVDs where Stan Lee talks to different creators. There's one where he talks to Jim Lee, one where he talks to Sergio, one where he talks to Todd McFarlane, Rob Liefeld. And those are all pretty good too. But yeah, it's clear that Stan is winging it through most of that. It's like, well, we just want you to draw, so I guess I'm just going to sit back and let you draw. And then he lets the artist ad-lib it, but I've never seen that, How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. My first introduction to John Buscema was that book, and I got really excited about his art, and then I think I found out shortly after that he had died. And the story that was described.
Oh, why do you tell me that right after I make fun of the poor guy?
What?
Oh,
no. Well, it's like, don't
Dave,
make fun of.
Dave, everybody dies.
Got bad news about Pablo Picasso also.
Dave, news flash. Turns out Oscar Wilde's dead. Sorry
the story I read about Buscema, I mean, it was just a coincidence that I happened to discover him right before he passed. I mean, that book had been out for probably a decade or more. At when he died, but I remember getting really excited because, you know, there was no internet back then, and so if you saw an interview with a guy, it was in a magazine that you found in a comic book shop, and it was like the John Buscema, and I was like, oh, awesome, that's the Marvel Comics guy. And it was like, yeah, John went in and They knew he had a tumor, a cancer tumor in his stomach, and they determined that they could definitely remove it surgically. And then they went in to explore, and they opened him up, and they found that he was littered with them. There were multiple tumors of multiple sizes all over him, and the doctors knew immediately there was no way he was going to pull through. It was more than just the one tumor. And I'm like, I had just discovered this guy. I'm excited about this article. I saved it until I got home. And it was like, he died a horrible death. And I was like, aww. No! What? This is aww. Awful. I remember, and this is probably going to get me more ridicule, but I remember crying over that. I wept actual tears over that.
Aw, no, that's sweet. I can empathize with that.
Because I don't know, Dave, if you ever saw this, but right around the time I discovered the book, also a complete coincidence, Marvel put out a do-it-yourself version of that book, and it was a pack you bought, and it was on official 11x17 Marvel Bristol. And it was a submission kit for Marvel. And there were blank – there was like – I don't know. It was like learn to be a penciler, learn to be an inker, learn to be a letterer, learn to be a colorist. And it had all of the instructions for each segment. But that at the time was the only way to get official ruled – pre-ruled blue line comic board was you bought those kits and just kept the penciling section. But they had blue line Sal Buscema, I think, art that you could ink and send in. And inked art you could color and send in letter. Did you guys ever see that?
Yeah.
No, but I believe you when you say that.
Yeah. Existed. Wow, memories.
People.
People.
People and things. Amazing.
So listen, to recap.
I just love picturing the 9-year-old Scott Kurtz going, oh my goodness, it's a whole Marvel submission kit. This is what I need.
What?
Nothing.
This is exactly what I need.
Oh,
the Wells Fargo wagon is a coming down the street.
I just love the Scott Kurtz of 9 years old that I invented earlier in the podcast. He sort of got the cute little lisp, but he's like, oh my goodness, the Marvel submission packet. I'm going to pencil this art. This will be fantastic.
As you lift up your airman's goggles and put your propeller beanie down.
And
what
I have
adventures
some,
you were having.
I have he's some.
Holding, he's holding a co- he's holding a copy of the Rocketeer as he's running around the yard. Whee!
And I have some ridiculous 1930s exclamation like "Gee Willikers!"
You're riding in your red. What are they called? Red arrow wagons or whatever those.
My radio flyer.
The radio,
radio flyer.
Flyer.
And you're going. All right, Luke, you're clear to take your shot.
Jeez. For your information, it was the back of my dad's Pinto. The other cars were the TIE Fighters, and I was Chewbacca. My brother was Han Solo, okay?
Yeah, that's
nice.
Good.
Nice.
That's good stuff.
That's good.
And it, yes,
and that's
the back of the Pinto.
That can be our capstone, I think.
Yeah, let's – hey, I got an idea. Let's end this podcast.
All right, so from all of us, including me, 9-year-old Scott Kurtz, we'll see you next week.
Wow. The best part is when I get to hear that in perfect, locally recorded pitch.
At San Diego Comic Con.
Once I
I'm the Rocketeer.
Oh
Whee!
My God! Somebody draw that. You know someone's going to draw that.
Whoopee!
And he's got his cap just slightly off skew on his forehead. This is the best.
As reference for whoever it is that's going to draw this picture of 9-year-old Scott Kurtz in his Rocketeer gear, I did not start getting heavy until late high school, early college, so please don't draw a little fat Scott 9-year-olds. I was a skinny little 9-year-old. At least give me that when you draw this and send it to me, which inevitably will happen.
Oh, and you'd hate for that to happen.
I would.
You sound like you're very disappointed.
As Chris and I are both drawing it as we're talking, oh, you'd hate that, wouldn't you, email?
Who's going to be first?
All right. And we stop recording in 3,
2,
1. Good night, everybody.